Welcome to Get Ofri at the Intuitive Transformation Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. Paul Selleck is back with us tonight. We're going to be talking about his new book, The Book of Freedom. And this is the third book in the Mastery Trilogy. And folks, you're going to absolutely love it. So if you believe in channeled messages, even if you don't, this is a show for you. Are you looking to connect with your Christ consciousness? Okay, are you ready for that next step in your trek to personal self-discovery? This show is for you. So listen in, take some notes, and do go out and get this book. I'm going to talk a little bit more about it in a few minutes, but do get this book. It is life-changing. Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you break through the blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you release your BS that is holding you back. But the question I always ask is, are you truly ready to? And by the way, folks, BS is belief system. Now, a bit about me for my new listeners. Intuitive since birth, I'm a third-generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience helping people break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing information which enables you to become a master builder of your life. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I'm the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I authored Getting Your Eminence, the Men and Many book, and Masterful Choice is the Key to Easy, Effective Change. I provide consultations and healings regarding relationships, business, career, money, and love. They heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your life to the fullest. My clients tell me that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. To find out more about me and the services I offer, go to my website, MoniqueChapman.com. I invite you to like me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. You can also sign up for my opt-in newsletter, Intuitive Living, from my website. And again, that's MoniqueChapman.com. Release agreements to whom you think you are. You are free. You are free. You are free. Paul Selleck is a clairvoyant practicing in New York City. He's also a graduate of Yale University and a retired professor. He began his second career back in 1987 after having a spiritual experience. He started out in his living room with a small group of people, and now he works with people worldwide. You can check him out at his website, and that is paulselleck.com. Welcome back, Paul.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's great to have you back. You know, the Book of Freedom, the Mastery Trilogy, Book 3, this is your sixth book, and I've got to tell you, each book becomes more engaging for me, more stimulating, but this is the most provocative book for me that you've written yet. And the attunements, as I was reading it, the attunements just grab you energetically. I mean, I was reading the book to get through the material so I could talk to you, and I didn't want to. I wanted to stop and reflect and take my time so it gets a reread. And this time, you know, looking at it, I think, from my higher self. But thank you, because this book speaks to your eternal self. How did you get there?
How did I get to...
Speaking to the eternal self with such poise.
Well, I'm not the writer of these books. You know, my name is on the cover, but the books are channeled. Mm-hmm. So the guides that I work with are actually dictating these things. And the books are, all of the books, in fact, are the unedited transcripts of the channeling sessions. The Book of Freedom, which is the most recent book that was published, was dictated entirely in front of students over the course of, you know, workshops and online seminars. I think there were about 30 days of dictation or something like that over the course of a few months. So how did I get there? I just kept showing up for this stuff, you know, often when I didn't want to and when I couldn't believe it and when it was, you know, challenging to everything that I was brought up to believe in. And I continue to show up. You know, I was an academic up until about 3 years ago, and I've only been public with this work as a channel since the book started coming out in about 2010. So, you know, the guides write quickly or speak quickly. I mean, they're all spoken. They're all oral teachings that are then transcribed. And so when people say, what's it like to write a channel book, I have to say I didn't write it. You know, it's I'm taking dictation. I'm sitting in a chair, hearing and repeating what I'm hearing, and often at a breakneck pace. They can speak very, very quickly, and I'm amazed that people can keep up at times.
Okay. When did you first start begin your journey into channel and connecting with these guides?
Well, I mean, I was raised sort of an atheist, and when I was 25, I you know, was a bit of a mess, and I was a year out of graduate school, and I had a list of things that I had to have achieved in the world that I thought would make me okay, and I got the whole list, and I wasn't okay, and I started praying for the first time in my life. You know, I don't know how that happened. I mean, I do know I was in a hotel, and the Gideons leave this book in the drawer, and I'd never read it, and I just picked it up, and it said, prayer for people in crisis, and I knew I was in a crisis. And so I said the prayer, and I kind of let it go, and 3 days later, I woke up and I asked myself what I could do that day that was positive, and I heard a voice telling me what to do, and that was the beginning of it. I studied healing a few years later, and that opened me up as a clairsentient and as a clairaudient, which are my primary abilities, you know, that I work with now. Mm-hmm. And I was volunteering at a center for people that were mostly, you know, living with AIDS. It was the height of the AIDS epidemic, and it was a tough time, and these centers were popping up. And I found out when I had my hands on people's bodies, I started to hear things for them, and it would be proven to be accurate. So that was the opening to clairaudience. And then I did a little group that met in my apartment for 18 years, and once a week I would set up a few folding chairs, and people would show up, and I would be in the energy with them. It was far less about the information that was coming through, because I was very challenged. I mean, I didn't trust that, but I trusted the energy because the energy was palpable. And it wasn't until probably about 2008, after I quit smoking, I'd been a heavy smoker, that they began to lecture through me. And that's the way that I've been working ever since. And once I was willing to transcribe and record, which I hadn't been willing to do up until 2009, you know, once that happened, they began to deliver the books.
As they're delivering the books, do you always grasp what they're saying right then and there? I mean, is it just an instant download for you that you instantly understand?
No, it's not about understanding. I often don't understand. I'm taking dictation. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, when people say, wow, you're a channel and I want to be a channel, I go, why would you want to be a channel? I mean, really, true channeling, I feel, is a form of stenography. You know, it's kind of like being the court reporter. It's about keeping yourself out as much as you can, and I'm hearing, and in my case, as I hear, I'm repeating the words. And so I'm a little odd that I whisper and repeat. It's not like I'm in my knowing and I'm knowing all this stuff that I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I'm saying it even though there's a part of me, it's in the back seat of the metaphorical car, because I've turned the steering wheel over to the guides, that's in the back seat having a tantrum, saying, what is this stuff and how can this be so? And occasionally I interrupt and say just that, and the guides basically have to step in and explain to me, you know, who's in resistance, what they're really going for. And so in all of the books, there are these moments when the guides will say, no, Paul is interrupting or Paul has a question. Now they anticipate my questions for the most part. So, I'm proofing the next book that's to come out in August, and I saw something where they said, Paul has a question, and this question was completely in their language. So they languaged my question for me so that they could give the answer that they wanted to give, which is sort of a way of keeping the transcriptions on track, I think, as opposed to having me derail it and asking them to go off into territory that, you know, would be something that perhaps they'll get to later or is just not necessary or germane to the teaching that they're trying to bring through.
Okay. In the Book of Freedom, you talk, even though it's channeled information, it's like the guides know what we need to know here on Earth at this particular time. Couple of the things that really caught my attention. One is about separation. You said that separation is a collective belief. Could you expand on that, please?
Well, I mean, it's again their teaching. So I'll do my best to try to interpret, but I don't. You probably know the book better than I do. You know, you sat down and read it and had an experience. I dictated it, you know, in I guess what you could call a light trance, and so I'm not retaining all that much. And then I did the audio book, so that's when I really sat down in the studio and read it through, but I was reading it aloud. So they say, you know, we've been taught to believe historically that God is up in, if there is a God at all, it's up there in the clouds someplace, and we're in the mud. And what they're teaching is, you know, God or whatever you want to call God is the mud. It's everything. It's everything or nothing at all. And the realization of this will take us beyond separation. And that collectively we've agreed to separation. So we continue to claim what we've had. The guides have said, you know, we're always dining out on yesterday's leftovers. We're always expecting to get what we've had. And that's why we end up replicating so much of the stuff we say we don't want, because we expect it. And this is happening both on a personal level and on a collective level. So when when people say, you know, you create your own reality, you know, which people claim, the guides would say, well, yes, but you're also in a collective creation as well. So while you didn't say create the war in Iraq, for lack of a better example, you're complicit to it because the consciousness that you hold is informing what you see. You're in vibrational or resonant accord with everything you see. Now, when you begin to shift your frequency and shift your consciousness, that's a way to lift beyond the collective agreement to separation. And that when you do that, you actually give everybody else permission to do the same thing, which is very much the teaching of the Book of Freedom.
Hmm. Now, in the Book of Freedom, you talk about fear and how fear is a liar, and fear is also an opportunity to learn. Why is it that we're so encased, embraced in this energy that seems to be of the lower octaves?
Well, they say that the action of fear is to claim more fear, and they've said this for years. And they say if you look at even just the last choice you made because you were afraid, see what it got you. And more than likely, you'll see that it got you more fear. So, you know, we're taught to agree to fear. If you watch the TV on any day and you watch the news, you get everything that you're supposed to be frightened of, you know, and the invitation to fear, again, is to release your own independence. You know, if I'm taught, you know, I mean, the guides say something like, you know, we're still acting out on the stuff that we've been taught to be fearful of when we were children. Now, there's a difference, I suspect, between something fearful and the idea of self-preservation. If I'm camping and a bear shows up, run for the hills. Get out of there. You know what I mean? But that it doesn't mean that I have to be frightened of bears. Do you know?
Right.
I mean, that's the difference. You know, we tend to, you know, the guides say that our belief that we're separate from the person beside us has gotten to the extent that we believe that we're separate from our source. And that agreement and separation is finally fear-based. We're of the same stuff. The guides say all the time, you know, you were born, you have a right to be here. The kingdom, which they say is the awareness of the divine in all manifestation, is your inheritance. It's not something you have to earn or be good enough for, you know, or pray hard enough to get. It's the realization of the presence of the divine in all things. But, you know, the guides say again and again, what you damn damns you back. You know, and what you put in darkness or who you put in darkness calls you right to the darkness. And that's the hypocrisy of a lot of religion, you know, which is teaching separation instead of unity. And if God is there, if there is something you want to call God, they say again and again, it must be everything. And everything's sort of present but operating in different levels of alignment or what they would say is tone or vibration. But it's all of the same source.
Okay. Well, in the book, you talk about, very early in the book, you talk about the Christ in manifestation is widely misunderstood. It's not religion. And you just talked about religion, and I think like religion's control over people. Is that part of the reason why fear has come in and so prevalent now, your guides think?
I don't know. I mean, I would have to ask them, and I actually get a head shake, no, it's all up to you. This is really all up to us and what we've chosen to agree to. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I believe, and the guides have said, that at the heart of all the world's religions, there's a common truth and great beauty, you know, and an opportunity to learn. But the structures and the politics that have been and the commerce that's grown around religions has been the problem. So, you know, does that contribute to separation? Sure. I mean, I was watching some, I don't know, some YouTube thing that showed up in my feed today about some minister that was saying that yoga was demonic, you know, because Hinduism is demonic. And I'm going, and then they had some, it was CNN or some old clip, I'm sure, that's recycling, and then there was a priest saying, that's ridiculous. You know, you don't demonize an entire religion or entire group of people who think differently from you. The guides use much of the language, or some of the language, that is, you know, I think known as, or known through Christianity. They'll speak about the Christ, but their definition of the Christ is very specific, and they say it again and again and again. The Christ is the aspect of the Creator that is seeking its own realization as who and what you are, who has true identity and what is manifestation. It's the God within. It's the seed of God that's in everything and every human being. So that's how I understand it. Mm-hmm. Now, that's commonality. That's not separation. Do you understand? To realize the presence of the divine in whoever you see or whatever you see is to realize what must always be there. And the guides would say must because they say, you know, what is true is always true.
Mm-hmm.
And if the presence of the divine is, then it's always there. The guides say again and again, you know, you can't make anybody holy. It's not possible. But you can realize the inherent divinity in anyone or anything. I mean, it's easier sometimes to see it in a tree or a blade of grass or a flower, you know, than it is in the person you disagree with, you know, or those people over there. And, you know, we're often invited to operate with separation. It goes back to that teaching of what you damn damns you back. And the guides say, you can't be the light and hold another in darkness. It's impossible. Can't be so. And anybody that's saying they're doing that is probably claiming separation.
Okay. Folks, we're speaking with Paul Selig. We're talking about his latest book, and it's the Book of Freedom, the Mastery Trilogy. This is book number 3. You can check him out at his website, paulselig.com, where you're going to get a wealth of information. And if channeled information, spiritual growth, finding yourself is of importance to you, this is definitely some information that would be important to check out. Paul, in the book, you talk about, or the guides talk about, the small self and the divine self. Could you explain to us what they are?
I can try. I mean, they say that the small self is the personality structure. You know, it's that, and that we sort of get a sense, or we operate with this thing at the cost of who we truly are. So they're not, you know, they're not dismissing personality. There's a reason for it. But, you know, we tend to think that we are, I don't know, what we were told by our parents, you know, and what we're told by our culture at the time that we're born in, or our ethnicity, or our religion, or our age, or our sexual preference, or gender, all those things. I mean, these are ways of knowing the self through sort of the common lens. Now, you know, most anybody that I know would say, well, I know I'm not my job, and I know I'm not my religion, I'm not the color of my skin, I'm far more than that. And it's not to dismiss those other things, but it's about a re-identification as who you truly are. And the guides say the true self is the divine self, that aspect of self that exists outside of time, you know, that it is, you know, simply is. And the realization of the true self, and they use different names to speak to it. They call it sometimes the true self, the divine self, the eternal self, the Christ itself. Mm-hmm. They say that the purpose of that aspect of self is to be realized as who and what we are. It's who we really are. It's not the idea of who we are that we've given all of this power to. So if I feel or if I believe that I'm worthless or unlovable or will never figure out what I'm here for, any of those things, those beliefs are going to be confirmed by my reality. And you know this. It's what you teach, you know. So it's the BS you spoke about earlier. So to move beyond that is to move to the aspect of the self that can't be in agreement to what the small self believes. Do you understand? So the guides would say, you know, the true self is never ashamed, doesn't know fear, doesn't blame, because it has no need to. So as we begin to align at that level, we begin to have a very different experience of ourself and as we operate in a body, as we operate here in this collective agreement to be in form.
Mm-hmm. So how do we blend together or weave or braid together the divine self and the personality self? Because sometimes we're operating from that personality self space.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
sometimes the divine, and how do we move through that without putting judgment on ourselves?
Yeah, it's a good question. I can't say that I'm there yet. I mean, the guides work with attunements. Mm-hmm. And their energetic attunements that they say, it's done through language. They say the language is encoded with vibration that works on the energetic field. So one of the attunements, I know who I am in truth, I know what I am in truth, I know how I serve in truth, they say will work with the field. And that's actually a re-identification of who, identity, what, form and expression, which is service of the divine as who and what. Now, what I understand about what happens to the small self through this process, or the personality self, is it's utilized, but it's absorbed by the true self. When I was, this might help you understand, when I was in my early 30s, and I was struggling, and I was just opening up as a channel, and I'm 99% sure that I heard this in channel because I wrote it down on a piece of paper because I didn't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
I stuck it in a book. And what I heard was, freedom will come when the throne relinquishes its king. And now I understand it. And the idea is that who's sitting in the throne? Is it the true self? Is it the divine self? Is it the God within who's sort of running the show? Or is it the small self who, the guides say, rules a small kingdom? It's the aspect of self that wants what he wants when he wants it and thinks he or she should be what she was taught to be and have that confirmed by the world. So the guides teach alignment, and they do teach braiding, and they speak to a braiding of the will in the Book of Freedom. And they talk about that idea of, you know, thy will not mine be done, which I think is a very beautiful and valid prayer. But they also say that it's also dealing with the polarity, that there's the will itself is not necessarily a good thing. And the idea of union, you know, thy will and my will are one, or moving into that alignment, they talk about that as a braiding of the will, and they say when that happens, the higher will finally assumes, you know, the will that believes itself to be operating in separation. Again, I don't think we can make this stuff happen at the level of personality. I don't think the personality self fixes the personality self. You know, I think that's a big waste of time.
Mm-hmm. So there's some people out there with school of thought that, you know, you do the work and then all of a sudden you are wise. And based on what I believe and what I feel is within your books is that it's always a process. It's not, you know, getting to a certain destination and therefore you are higher than or lower than. It's just, you know, a process that the soul is going through. Am I understanding
that correctly?
correctly?
Absolutely right. The soul is going to get its lessons regardless. Do you know what I mean? If there's something that I came to learn, in likelihood I'll get it and I'll learn it. I mean, in the next book, the book that's not even out yet, that they just finished dictating a few months ago, they speak about sort of what happens to karma at that level, which I'm still sort of grappling with. Mm-hmm. But I suspect that this simple idea is that the small self isn't the one who achieves enlightenment. Do you know what I mean? It's just not possible. So the idea that I'm going to be enlightened, I am going to be an awakened being, still is a claim of the small self. And so that's what ends up becoming, I suspect, what people think of as sort of spiritual materialism, as if there's a goal to this. Now, the idea of realization, which is the guide's teaching, they say is inherent knowing. And you can't know the divine in yourself without knowing the divine in somebody else. And when people sort of assume that this is about becoming better than you are or higher than you are in an equation with other people, we're right back to ego. Do you know, we're right back to this idea that there's some place to get to. And I don't know that that's the case. It's very much a teaching of being. And finally, I would suspect a teaching of humility. You know, and this idea that, you know, that I'm going to become, I as a small self will become the great I am, is a misunderstanding. The guides taught early on when they were teaching the concept of the Christ in form, and the manifestation of the Christ in form, they said something in a group that always stuck with me, and they said, you don't become the Christ becomes you. And that's the key here, to understand you don't become the divine self. The divine self becomes or expresses as you. So, again, it's sort of we're turning the wheel over to that aspect of the divine that can do this work and not sort of trudging up the mountain by ourselves, unaided. You know, that's how I would look at it.
Okay. Well, in one of the attunements, and I'm going to read this from the book, and it's about the divine self, and it says, I allow the divine self to give me the memory I require to know myself in fullness toward my realization of who and what I am in perfect manifestation. I am here, I am here, I am here. And to me, you know, when I read that, it just sent chills up and down my spine, but it also, I don't know, triggered something for me to, I became quiet, and this is one of the times I had to put down the book because I couldn't read anymore. Yeah. It just took me to another place. So how can we, as humans, spirits living this human existence, move forward to truly embrace our true divine selves so that we cannot necessarily live so much in the small self personality, which you say basically equals our history, and be open to what's to come?
Well, I think all of the books that the guides have written are about how this can be done. And I don't know that this is, and I would hope it's not the only way to get there. That would be a terrible thing. I think that there are many ways to move towards this, and I think many schools of thought on how that's done. And I'm not going to say that the ones the guides bring through us are higher than another. I don't know that. I don't read other people's work, so I don't know. But I do think that they're bringing through a system here of realization, and each teaching that they bring through sort of builds upon the prior teaching. So, and they're continuing to do. There's another trilogy that's already begun, you know, and now they're teaching what happens once we're at that level of alignment of realization, which is a whole other can of worms, and it's well outside the box. How do we begin to do this? I would suggest we have to go back to the possibility that we're worthy of it anyway, you know, in spite of who we think we are, what we believe we've been or have done, or we're told we were, or we're told what could be. I mean, the Book of Freedom is actually speaking to this artificial ceiling that we're all in agreement to about what can be. Mm-hmm. Do you understand that? Like the collective agreement that, well, you really can't know the divine, or you can't embody as that. Now, to embody as that, I think, is to realize who you truly are. And what you said that gave you the chills was the remembrance. And, you know, the guides say again and again, you know, we don't make you holy. You've always been that. You forgot, you know. And the realization of the divine in form, which is a lot of what they're teaching in the Book of Freedom, they say is a necessary step to realizing the divine in all manifestation. For example, it's easier for me to decide that the tree outside the window is of God than my overweight body, you know, which I can turn against very quickly. But until I realize the divine in form and know that God is, or what you want to call God, the energy that we tend to name as God that informs all things, is expressing as my body, I also can't realize that the divine is expressing in the tree. I'm still operating in separation. You know, it's really, they're moving us towards the awareness of the ever-presence of Source that exists, what they say is in a higher octave that we can align to. And when we align to that octave, you know, they say any piece of music can be played in multiple octaves, and your experience here, which is being known and through the collective agreement of the octave that we share, can also be lifted to the higher. And then by your lifting to the higher, the tone or vibration that you're emitting and in response to actually lifts what you experience to it through co-resonance, or, you know, I think the word is entrainment that I just learned recently from somebody else.
Okay, so is it that when we are living in this energy, and we're in the octaves and in a chord, and I'm looking at it, I think as you point out in the book, as not A-C-C-O-R-D, but A and then C-H-O-R-D, like C chord or G chord or whatever. Mm-hmm. Is that what we're experiencing, that vibration, if you will, and that we will attract to us or people or situations that are in congruent with that chord, with that energy?
Let me try to answer this. I think because they say A-C-C-O-R-D or A-C-H-O-R-D, and they mean the same thing. Mm-hmm. So if you look around the room you're in right now, or anybody listening just looks around the room they're in, you're in vibrational accord with everything you see. You're in alignment to it. Mm-hmm. You're agreeing, if nothing else, you can say, well, I didn't pick the couch, but you're in agreement that it's there. And right. That's a chord. So okay. We're already operating in this sort of vibrational equality of co-resonance. When you lift the frequency to a higher level, what you begin to call to you will be of equal resonance. And your vibration at that level, and this is what they're really beginning to teach now, and even the next book, is how the manifest world is lifted through this co-resonance, through consciousness. So back to that idea of the war in Iraq. Well, you didn't claim it, but you're in co-resonance with it. But the consciousness that you hold, actually, they would say, informs the war in Iraq. So your ability to realize or know the presence in the divine in anything you see actually calls forth the true nature of the thing beyond what it appears to be, beyond, you know, your ideas about it, which tend to be inherited. So to realize the divine in anything is to lift the thing to its true nature, or to the presence of what you might call God, for lack of a better word, that must be there. And that is changing your experience. Now, this is done through being and not through effort. And again, co-resonance, you know, it sounds, you know, magical to me, but the experience of it isn't. And when I do workshops sometimes, the first time they brought this through, it was in the claim, I know what I am. Mm-hmm. And the guy, I understood the guy say, you know, I know who I am, I know what I am, I know how I serve. I understood who identity, and I understood service, I thought, although I understood wrong, and now I understand it because they've taught it, you know, in the Book of Freedom and in the subsequent book. But the claim I know what I am was confusing to me. And I always heard, well, in form or in manifestation. I was like, okay, so yeah, I'm of God, so what? But they say the realization of the divine in matter actually has a response. And they actually sent all the students out onto this big lawn in Esalen, and they had them claim the divine in someone else with like 10 feet between them at least, and was like, I know what you are in truth. And you can literally feel the energy come back to you. It's astonishing. You can do it in the street, in an airport. But basically, what you bless, blesses you right back. You're claiming the manifestation of the divine in what you see. And the divine, they say, will sing back to you. It's palpable. I mean, that's what's so interesting about this, is you can feel it, which helps me to trust it and keep going with it, even when it's confounding to my understanding of the reality that I grew up with.
But it's interesting because you've been able to transcend that reality and explore and be open to new, different information, which in a sense is unusual because a lot of people tend to stay stuck in that energy that they were raised up in. So how do we get past that? How can we open up to at least look at something else, even if we don't completely embrace it?
Well, I mean, the areas of my life that I've sort of surrendered are working very well, you know. Mm-hmm. The areas of my life, there are areas of my life that don't, you know. I'm still, like, single and complaining about that, and I, you know, there's all these things that I can, you know, get a bug up my butt about and be cranky over. But how to get unstuck, in my understanding, is to realize that I don't, A, have to be. I mean, nothing, the guides say nothing can be changed until it's first realized as a possibility. And they teach something, they call it frames. It's in an earlier book, the Book of Knowing and Worth. They say we're always operating with these frames that we hold up. Mm-hmm. And the purpose of the frame is to fill what the frame is. So if my frame is, I'm never going to find somebody, or I'm, you know, whatever, that's what I continue to call myself, call to myself, to understand this. And that becomes my agreement with reality. It's like the person who says, I always date jerks. Every time they date another jerk, they get to pat themselves in the back for being right. So we're always getting what we expect, is what the guides say. Always. You know, whether or not we say we want it, we must have some investment in the frame in order to maintain it. Now, some of these things, you know, we're taught, you know. I mean, many of us, unfortunately, are taught that we're not lovable or that there's something inherently wrong with us. And then we build a life that's reflective of that. And I suspect that it's the true self who knows he or she is lovable and capable of being loved and loving others is the one who flowers through this and realizes that the other thing is simply not true. You know, again, the guides say what is true is always true. And, you know, what's true is your true nature, not what you were told you were by your parents or your boss or the teachers in school, but who in fact you've always been and will always be, which is an aspect of the Creator in form.
Okay. How do we get to the point where we can embrace the energy of acceptance? I mean, just like, this is it.
Well, I mean, I'm actually hearing self-forgiveness, that you're not there yet, because that would be a big help. I hear we always think we're supposed to be someplace we're not. And that actually sabotages everything. Everything can only happen, I hear, in the moment that you stand in. Not some other day, when. You know, when it's been understood or figured out, when you've ascended in consciousness. I'm hearing again, it happens in the moment you stand in. Be prepared for change. I hear be prepared for change and allow change and allow change. Trust change. Trust change. Give yourself permission to experience change, and it will come in a high way. And I hear, and it will come in a high way.
Okay.
So that was from them.
Oh, well, thank you, guys. I appreciate that. And, so we attempt to accept ourselves or accept a situation or whatever, but then we're feeling shameful and we're feeling guilty. Mm-hmm. How do we lose that? How do we drop that weight that is holding us?
I have to go to the guides with this, you know, because I don't know that I know the answer to this. That's what I'm saying. They're actually saying he doesn't want to say it to me wrong. He doesn't want to be made wrong. I have to say, when I channel, I whisper the words and repeat them, and that's what the muttering is about for your listeners. We'd like to say this. They're saying, we would like to say this, your idea of who you are. Your idea of who you are is shameful. Release the idea of who you are. Release the idea of who you are. It's just an idea. It's just an idea that you give great authority to. I'm going to put that from I am a good person or a bad person or a bad person. Ideas you may hold yourself or ideas you may hold about yourselves based on your idea of good or bad, based upon your idea of good or bad. To know who you truly are, to know who you truly are, I suppose, is to realize the true self, the divine as who and what, the divine as who and what, who is here to be expressed, who is here to be expressed for the good of all, for the good of all. If you find yourself in fear, or in shame or in negation of the divine. You are in fear. You are in fear and listening to and learning through it and listening to it and learning through it. Although it's been on a higher way, although the lessons may be learned in a higher way. I made a mistake. I felt ashamed. Is a way to forgive yourself, is a way to experience yourself and perhaps learn about choices and perhaps learn about choices. But it is not the only way to learn. If you believe yourself to be shameful, you will continue to call shame to you. You will continue to call shame to you. This is all opportunity. This is all opportunity to know who and what you are. To know who and what you are. So what you are is to know who and what you are beside what you were taught to be. You were taught to be and what you were taught to be and what you were taught to be. In most cases, shameful. In most cases, is shameful or afraid or not good enough or needing to be right at the cost of others being right. When you know who and what you are, you stop demanding the lower self. You stop demanding the lower self. Become its articulation of your world. My shameful self in my sad world would be a way the small self would know itself. I'm the most powerful one here. I am the most powerful one here. Also the small self trying to do reality, trying to dictate a reality at the cost of sovereignty, at the cost of the sovereignty of everyone else, period. And they're here, period.
Okay. Also, thank you to the guides for explaining that, and thank you. Now, this question I'm going to ask is a bit weird, but it's something that, you know, has come to my mind. You were looking at YouTube before you start the show. I actually had on the TV news in the background, one of the cable news channels, and talking about politics. And if we look at the political landscape today in the world, you've got Trump, you've got other leaders across the world who are really pontificating, in at least the way I understand it, fear, hate, division, them versus us. Mm-hmm. I think the Book of Freedom has come out at the right time to help you understand. Yeah. But how do we... Well, first of all, why do the guides feel this energy has come up, if they're willing to speak to this? And why is it so prevalent now? And is this something that we can move past? I mean, you say to see the divine in everything. So it's when I look at Trump, it's hard for me to see the divine.
I know. I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you here. And the guides have never, ever spoken about a political figure by name. You know, they don't do it. I mean, they say their teachings are actually sort of transcending time. They did speak about the reason for this stuff in a recent interview, and I was shocked that they answered it. It was, and that one's up on YouTube. It was but they did talk about the opportunity that was being presented. But in some ways, what they said is what we're dealing with now is what's always been there that's been hidden under the covers. And this is what happens when the covers get ripped back and, you know, you see all the bugs in the bed, you know, that have been there. So I don't know that this is new. I just think it's seen. So I'm going to see if they want to say anything about how to witness this. Tell me to say this, you know. I was doing, I channel a lot. I do workshops all over the place, like 3 weekends a month I'm channeling, and they're always delivering new stuff. And I was actually, this was a couple of years ago, I was channeling in Calgary, Alberta for a weekend, and I woke up Sunday morning for the second day of the workshop to hear about the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando, and which was horrific. And I sort of showed up to this workshop not knowing what they were, if they would deal with it or not, or how we were going to get through this. And they delivered a lecture called How to Deal with an Atrocity that we actually recorded and just put up on YouTube, you know. And they talked about, by the way, and this is also up on YouTube, this 3 days before the last presidential election, I think it was in Richmond, Virginia, I think this was the workshop, they delivered a lecture called Great Change. And they said, you know, what you think about choice is the choice between the milk and the cream for your coffee or your tea, and what you're about to get is what happens when the table holding the milk and the cream is turned over. You know, it's a mm-hmm. whole different thing. And this was before, you know, the election results. Let me see if they want to say anything to how we deal with this in love. I hear in love and in awareness, and an awareness of truth. In truth, a lie will not be held. And to realize truth, and to realize truth in the face of a lie, in the face of a lie is to claim the truth, is to claim the truth that must be there, that must be there. At the cost of what you see or what you would have seen or what you would have seen in many cases, you still want what you want. You still want what you want. I don't want this kind of present. I don't want this kind of present. Perhaps that one would be better. Perhaps that one would be better, but you're still dictating what should be. But you're still dictating what should be from the palette of the old, from the palette of the old. And understand this. And understand this, where you stand as a species, where you stand as a species is in great change, is in great change. What you see around you, what you see around you are the equivalents of volcanoes. Are the equivalents of volcanoes going off. The landscape is changed by the volcano. The landscape is changed by the volcano. It is not always pretty. It is not always pretty when the ash fills the air. When the ash fills the air, but in time there will be no growth. But in time there will be new growth and new awareness and new awareness in times of change. In times of change, you must know who you are. You must know who you are and who others are and who others are, not as they present or their presence as they are perceived through personality but the manifestation of the divine that still must be there in spite of their actions and the consequences of them. What you damn damns you back. Who you put in darkness calls you right there with them to lift another to the light is to claim the presence of God. It's not always convenient, and it is not always convenient to do so to the self that likes to judge needs to be right or appreciates fear and uses it as a tool for others' control. Period. Well, mm-hmm. That's what they said. Period.
Well, thank you. I appreciate them again coming through and sharing that information. You know, a lot of people today are looking to make the world better, so to speak. You know, you'll hear people say, oh, I wish I'd win the lotto, because if I did, I would do all of these altruistic things, and most of them are lies. But anyway, world service, you say that world service is not our occupation, but our divine expression as ourselves. Could you talk to the audience a little bit more about that?
Well, I mean, you know, and since part of this claim, I know who I am, I know what I am, I know how I serve. And the guides said when they first brought that through a few years ago, they said, how you serve is how you're most fully expressed as the true self. But I was still looking at it through the lens of, well, you know, I'm here to do spiritual work, or I'm here to be a teacher, or whatever. You know, I was a college teacher for a long time. It was a way that I served, and it was a fine way, and I loved doing it. But how you serve is the expression of the divine as you. It doesn't need to, I mean, we live in a culture where we tend to think about careers. People say, how do I serve, as if that's their career. It doesn't need, it's how you be. You can walk down the street as your true self in this vibrational field, and rather, like the lava in the volcano metaphor they just used, everything that you encounter can be transformed through that engagement. The true self as you knows what he or she's here for, and his or her expression is what is important. Now, if you're directed towards action, you know, it's time to do this or time to do that, in your knowing, in your inherent knowing, which is claircognizance and one of the ways that we're worked with through our intuitive selves, you'll do it. You know, there's no way you won't be able to do it, in my opinion. In the Book of Mastery, which was the first book of the trilogy, we included some Q&A from, you know, the public sessions. And there was a woman who said, well, I want to know how I serve. You know, I drive a school bus for a living. I bless all the kids when they get on the bus. I claim I am word through the bus, you know. But what am I here for? And the guide said, you know, you're doing it. You know, you're doing it. My friend Brent, who's about 6'4" and a big strapping man, I tuned into him once for Mutual Friend, and he came through walking down the street and walking down a path at night, looking up at the sky going, what am I here for? What am I here for? What am I here for? And they showed me a great big tree that had fallen across the path. And because he's a strong man, he bent down, he lifted the tree out of the path and tossed it out of the road, and then went back up to going, what am I here for? What am I here for? What am I here for? The answer was, he was there to move the tree that was right in front of him. And in doing so, he cleared that path for everybody that would follow after him, but he was expecting it to be something much more grand. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
It's how we're expressed in the moment we stand in. If there's an occupation attached to that, so be it. But, you know, a lot of people think, well, I'm going to go off and be a Reiki master, or I'll go off and start a center. Those are ways to serve, but just because they've been branded as spiritual doesn't mean that they are. When I first taught in the public schools many years ago, I ran an arts program. Some of the most amazingly aware, and at the time I would assume that I thought enlightened people, were working in some of the toughest schools in New York City. You know, and they floored me with the love that they had for their students. It was astonishing to me. That was service. Anyway, I'll shut up.
Oh, no, you talk on. Okay, so question, what is the kingdom of heaven?
Mm-hmm. The kingdom, the guides say the kingdom of heaven, or the kingdom, they just call it the kingdom, is the awareness of the divine in all manifestation. And that's aligned to by one who knows who he is, by one who exists there. The personality self isn't the one who enters. The guides say it's the true self, or the Christ itself, is the one who perceives the kingdom and abides there, and again, in co-resonance.
Okay. Now, when we go to your website, paulselleck.com, there is so much information here, folks. You can spend years, okay, and really get a lot of good information. However, in addition to the books that Paul has written, he also has a lot of information. If you want to connect with a group or like a study group or a guide, that information is on, and it seems to be throughout Canada and the United States. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep, probably more by now, yeah.
Okay, and then you have a membership site. Tell us about that and what we'll find there.
Well, with students of the guides, there are three tiers. I mean, you can join for free, and you'll have access to the stuff that's available for free online, and a newsletter. And you know, we deliver free content in the newsletters pretty much every month if we can. Mm-hmm. There's the library, which has an archive of videos and audio tapes and transcripts of past channelings, and there's a lot of them that are available through the library. And then there's the lab, and the lab actually is inclusive of the weekly live streams that I do most Wednesday nights. We take 1 week off now and then. The guides are lecturing and taking questions, and they're done in series. So you can just join one session and see if you like it, or you can sign up for the lab and do it on an ongoing basis. And if you're in the lab, there's also discounts that are available for, you know, online workshops that we offer. We just streamed one from New York City, and we'll be doing more of these in the future. So there are other things available through that.
Okay, and how?
And you get the library too, and all the other stuff. It's still there.
Okay, great. Now, how do you work with folks via private readings?
I do them. I don't do as many as I used to, so there's a little bit of a list, waiting list to get on. But they call me a medium for the living. So, you know, I don't talk to your dead relatives, but if you haven't talked to your aunt for 3 years and there's some difficulty, I can tune into your aunt. I can probably hear her. So I do a lot of relationship work. I do a lot of work with, you know, families. And I do, you know, precognitive work as well, but it's mostly about your growth, and the guides do come in and speak. So if people are having blocks in specific areas of their life, this is something that is helpful. If you want to know what your lucky numbers are, I am not the person to call. I'm not going to tell you.
There you go.
And somebody else can do that.
Thank you, because it's not about lucky numbers, folks. It truly isn't, but of course we all get to grow if we choose to grow. Paul, is there anything you and or your guides would like to leave with the audience, or have we completed it and it's a period?
They're saying, as we said, you have choices here. Choose the higher. Choose the higher. You're always in choice. You are always in choice. Choose the higher. Choose the higher. Do not choose in fear. Do not choose in fear, and you will learn well. And you will learn well in ease and ease and knowing, period. And they're saying, period. So I guess that's it from them.
Okay. So that's it.
Okay.
Okay. Well, folks, we've been speaking with Paul Selig. We've been talking about his latest book, and that's The Book of Freedom, The Mastery Trilogy, Book 3. It's available everywhere. Go to his website. You can see paulselig.com. You can see more about this book and the other work that he has put out. So, Paul, thank you so much for being with me today. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
And will you consider coming back for your next book?
Yes, next book is out in August from St. Martin's Press. It's called Beyond the Known Realization, the Beyond the Known Trilogy, Book 1.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yes.
Well, thank you. And to the audience, thank you for being with us today as we get over it and embrace the energy of freedom. The divine in me honors the divine in you. I'm truly honored and I appreciate your time. Now, if you're looking to switch up your life and make things a bit better for yourself, call me for a consultation. Consultations that are 30 minutes in length or longer are offered at a 10% discount if you mention the podcast. Love yourself enough to make an investment in yourself. Make that call, 888-240-6057. And remember, the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of freedom. Abundant blessings, light, and love to all. Namaste.